Next speaker is Debrosre Roy from the Department of Health Services Research at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. She's a second-year doctoral student and has a bachelor's degree in sociology, an MA in sociology, and an MA in gerontology. Do you have a wall big enough for all the diplomas?
I just went overboard with that.
She is involved in grassroots sustainable development and health projects in India with a special focus on non-genetically modified agriculture and birth outcomes. So please welcome Debso Ray.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And my motive behind, you know, putting all those degrees was to establish the fact that this is the first time I'm doing empirical research. So there might be some faults, and you might help me finding them out. So it's not moving. So today we're going to talk about the history of gender inequality and the outcomes of gender inequality in India. Take a brief look at what the literature suggests. Then talk about my study, which looks at intersections of maternal education and gender discrimination in nutritional outcomes in terms of growth. And then, you know, make some basic inferences and then go into the juicy part, talk about my personal experiences growing up as a female child in India and relate to certain other observations I made when I was doing field work back home. And then, if time permits, I'm going to talk about some policies that are there that intends to mitigate this problem. So, why talk about gender inequality? Because it has a very, very expansive scope in creating problems in India. The basic problem I'm talking about is, you know, disparate outcomes in terms of health, So, this, first of all, there's disparate outcomes in terms of health, and then overall development of the society is kind of manipulated by this system of inequality that is that's there in India. And you might argue that, you know, in gender inequality exists everywhere in the world, but in India it has a different scope altogether, a different background, different, you know, intersections that makes it more complicated in its effect on the society. So the first thing that starts off the story is on preference. About 85% of women in India want at least one son, and 33% of them want more sons than daughters. These have, you know, this kind of, you know, preference has religious and cultural underpinnings, but it definitely causes a female disadvantage. We have a very skewed sex ratio. It's 933 females per 1,000 males. And this has been consistent over the years. It has never, you know, never shown advantage for girls. And but the population is increasing, on the other hand. Infant mortality has gone down over the years, but the rate of decrease has also gone down from the 80s through the 2000s, the new millennium. But when we talk about infants who are, you know, who pass that, you know, neonatal mortality stage, they survive. 10% of them do not survive past their fifth year of birth. And I'm talking about 27 million infants that are born in India every year. So it's about, you know, 25% of the under five infant deaths in the world. That's a lot of disease burden. So literature suggests that there is gender discrimination in India. There is poor growth. About 44% of Indian children are either wasted, stunted, or underweight. There is illiteracy, especially in women. Almost like more than 50% of women are illiterate. That is, they have no education whatsoever. High levels of poverty. The last census showed 26.1% of the population living under the federal poverty level. Maternal age matters because about one-third of Indian women become mothers by the time they're 19. So they are not fully developed, they are not culturally equipped to deal with parenthood. Status of women, self-explanatory. It has gone down. There are regional differences in status of women in India being such a vast country, but there is, you know, it's generally thought that women have an inferior status compared to men. Parity does explain certain outcomes. Number of living children would, of course, kind of comment on what the subsequent child being born in the family would be exposed to, as in care or nutrition. And religion, which I omitted, has extremely important part as well, because India is very diverse. And with the diversity, people want to retain their ethnic identities, and that is sometimes vested in their religious beliefs, and religion kind of dictates what they do in their everyday life, which is actually good, but somehow it has worked to the detriment of women. So this is my study design. The dependent variable is gender disparity in terms of poor growth outcomes to the detriment of women. Weight for age, wasted is weight. Sorry, underweight is weight for age. Wasting is weight for height, and stunting is height for age. So there are given, cutoff points for each of these measures, and thing is weight for height, and stunting is that any value which is about negative 2 standard deviations away from the established value given by the World Health Organization growth reference standard would be considered to be underweight, wasted, or stunted. Sex of the child is our first independent variable. Maternal education is our second, and then we had to put in a lot of covariates when we found all these things recurring in the literature we surveyed. So some of the covariates, family wealth, they're in the data set. By the way, we are using DHS, Demographic and Health Survey, or National Family Health Survey 2006 data. So the data set posits family wealth in quintiles, so we kind of, you know, recoded them into high, medium, and low. Residence, parity, sex composition at home, which means the number of boys and number of girls living at with their parents. Religion, Hindu, Muslim, and Christian, another, I'm sorry, I omitted Christian here. So, and maternal autonomy, which has, you know, over the years come up as a very important indicator of child outcomes, growth outcomes. So, so this one has four different components. One is has the mother any say in healthcare decisions in the household? Does she have a say in household expenses? Does she have a say in spending her husband's earnings? And does she have a say in deciding on where the family is going to visit, or whom the family is going to visit with during vacations? Maternal age was from 15 to 19, 20 to 29, 30 to 39, and above 40. Usually the range is from 15 to 45. So As you can see, a lot, considerable amount of women were in the 15 to 19 category. So primary correlations here. As you can see, the outcomes, nutrition outcomes in terms of wasting, stunting, and underweight, were not really correlated with the sex of the child. The p-values are not significant, and you can almost see, like, the percentage-wise distribution is almost, for the lack of a better word, equal between the sexes. But when we look at maternal education, this is the primary chi-square table. This has no controls whatsoever. But when we do, like, you know, we do run a chi-square for outcomes against maternal education, we can see a gradient almost. With no education, with no maternal education, registering the highest number of cases in each category when compared to mothers with the highest education level. It slides from 41.78% of the total number of children who belong to mothers with no education who experience stunting. It goes down to 8.541% of children of mothers who had the highest education who experienced wasting, and they were all statistically significant. These are some of the other covariates and their respective chi-square readings. Now, there's like one comment I need to make. The data is huge. It's the sample was 37,128. So whatever chi-squares you run, you have a significant p-value. But anyhow, even if we look at, I did not have the time to compute percentages, so these are the total weights in the sample. But most of them had significant p-values other than autonomy. So that's a very, I would say, the questions in the questionnaire was not very descriptive of what we intended to study. So we just threw it in there because it was there. So this is our adjusted model. So we ran a logistical regression. So when we look at sex, of course, the odds ratio is almost equals one. So there's no significant difference between male and female in terms of growth. In terms of growth outcomes. Poor growth. Now growth is a composite of the three: wasting, stunting, and underweight. Just to let you know. But when you talk about education, we kind of see that the p-values are extremely significant, although that the ORs are, odds ratios are not that, you know, significant, and the confidence in intervals are, you know, kind of not creating any problems here as it did in the, you know, the, when we looked at sex and variability in birth outcomes. The other important variable that came out was religion. In this, Muslims had a higher odds in compared to Hindus, which was the reference category, in having poor growth outcomes. That is, Muslim children. So what's not apparent? So basically what we found was there was not significant, there's not enough difference between the sexes to talk about, you know, gender disparity being existent in this population. But what is not apparent is some practices, like intra-household for food allocation. From my own experience, with the girl child is, like, in especially in poor families, not middle income, but poor families, the girl child is relegated to the back burner all the time. She's the last one to get the food, along with the mother, and she has the least amount of food on the plate. Time of feeding is also important. Some children are, you know, especially girl children, they eat with their mothers, they eat last. So So this has a cumulative effect on, you know, the lifelong story of that girl child. She grows up with all these disadvantages, all these all kinds of health problems keep accruing, and so that's the story of India, creates the downward spiral of female health, discriminated girls create unhealthy mothers, and that creates a spiral, a vicious cycle of poor health in India. Time's almost up, so thank you.